Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Thursday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. No stranger to the show, no stranger to the station. Hard to believe, by the way, this August it will be 9 years, a 9-year anniversary of 102.5 The Game. And our next guest was right there alongside me as we introduced Nashville to the station 9 years ago this August. Brad Hopkins, the stalwart left tackle for the Titans for a long time, 13 years to be exact, is on the line with us. B-Hop, what's going on?
Gentlemen, how are we?
Wow, thank you for that. That was awfully nice of you.
B-Hop.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, it's been a while since we've called that.
I know. What, gentlemen?
How you doing? That's right. So how are you and the family doing?
I use the term very loosely.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I shouldn't have pressed.
We're good, man. We're good. We're doing our part to quarantine, even though I saw that the state of Tennessee got a D for social distancing.
Yeah, we're not doing well.
You guys,
we're trying. I mean, look, this is show, Brad, this is show, let's see here, 11. Show 11, doing it from home.
Yeah.
Which is different.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, have you been doing the same, and how long have you been doing it for?
Let's see, 6 years.
Oh, you so you've been way ahead of the curve. You knew before all of us. You were way ahead.
Well, I used to trek, take my butt down to the Needle at Bridgestone Arena and do it from the palatial studios of the SiriusXM studio there. But paying $20 to go to work every time was getting to be a pain in the butt. So I invested in a, you know, one of those Kodak machines that you guys are probably on right now. And basically, I've been broadcasting from my house back to the studios in New York since 2014. Yeah.
Very smart. I wasn't sure, you know, how this was going to play. I've never done it from home, never had a three-person show, everybody at their house. But, I know it goes on. I know a lot of the national shows and, like you said, satellite shows, they do that already and have been doing it for a long time. But believe it or not, I don't know how these guys feel. I don't want to speak for them, but I thought it's, to this point, it's been pretty seamless. It's not really that much different than, sitting in studio and staring at each other.
You learn your speech patterns, especially when you do a show consecutively. You learn when someone is wanting to step in or maybe even extend the question without really stepping on each other, even though you're not in the same room. But, you know, it does have its advantages. I'm sure you guys are well aware at this point of being able to see each other in the same room. But you start to learn each other even though you can only hear each other. It's pretty fun. It's cool.
Yeah, that's a good point. Really good point. How's Bryson holding up? Because this has got to be a strange time for him to be – he's getting ready to turn pro and get drafted, and yet, it's going to be totally different than we've ever seen it for the NFL draft.
Yeah, he's pissed off at me right now.
Why is he mad at you?
Well, he said I cut his hair not the way he wanted it cut. So I told him I did the best I could with the tools I'm working with. You know, obviously most barbers close nowadays, so he has to turn to dad to get a haircut.
Uh-huh.
You know, I couldn't give him the great clips cut, so he was a little ticked off by it. I'm like, dude, this is what you get, man. My clippers are from Walgreens. What do you expect?
You get what you pay for, right?
Basically, that was for free. But anyway, no, I'm just kidding. This is absolutely crazy because I remember having so many conversations with people about the similarities between what Bryson and I had experienced and are experiencing him going through the whole, you know, draft process. And then it got derailed. And what I mean by that is, you know, you have to learn to be self-sufficient. When basically the guys that are giving grades can't come give grades, and, you know, the industry itself is now trying to be creative and reinvent ways to keep the model moving forward via the draft, virtual reality meetings, all this other stuff. Not virtual reality, but you know what I'm saying, Zoom meetings and whatever. Mm-hmm. We're now starting to kind of creep back into some semblance of business as usual, even though it's been dramatically affected. So what are the guys doing now to continue, you know, staying in shape when gyms are closed? You know, just kind of, you can't even work together with more than 10 people. You know what I mean? So there's difficulties there. So, yeah, I know of a couple of spots where people have actually opened up their own personal gyms in their homes to have, you know, groups of maybe four or five athletes come and do some training. And, you know, that's kind of where Bryson finds himself. You know, where he's blessed enough to have some resources to where people, you know, not publicly are able to work out. But, you know, he's doing what he can to kind of maintain a focus and see what happens in this completely different environment that we're now experiencing in the NFL.
So he's not leaning on dad and younger brother to work him out?
No. I mean, I did enough with him when we trained at Boost, you know, to where he's seen enough of dad. You know? So, you know, now it's just really about maintaining. You know, I think that everyone knows that, you know, everyone's at a disadvantage. You know, to a degree, you know, some people are able to travel and do more than other states, you know, which, you know, there's a disadvantage there, but, you know, they'll deal with it. You know, I think that Bryson has done enough, as most of the kids have done enough to this point, to kind of put out a good resume on you know, what they're going to bring as far as the value to a team, you know. So it's not like they're going to go into this thing completely blind. They've already had a good idea, first off, what these kids have done and accomplished in their senior season. Most of, you know, if not all of the bowl games and, you know, combine situations are already in the books. You know, sure, there were some pro days to kind of cross T's and dot I's, but for the most part, they had a pretty good idea of who these kids are and where they should probably go.
Last thing on my end, Brad, I know you've told this story before. I've heard you tell it, that you try to get a feel of who's really interested in you, and you kind of were duped. You didn't really think it was then the Oilers. I think you've told the story, you thought it was the Browns, right, that were real high on you? You thought that's who was going to draft you? Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and so
go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so has Bryson been able, and I know, as you just said, it's crazy because it's now Skype and Zoom, and it's just different because you're not getting to do this stuff at the facility or with them and pro day. Does he have any idea of who has, like, real interest in him?
Absolutely none.
Yeah.
There are teams that, you know, seem to continue to call more than others. You know, I'm like, how many times do you need to ask the same questions? Good Lord. But if they're continuing to do it, you know, then they're obviously the ones that are showing the most interest. For me, Bill Belichick coached me in the Senior Bowl. So he had an opportunity, and I had an opportunity to work with him before this whole process, you know, before we even got to the combine, you know, for him to even show further interest that we sat down and watched film together when I was in college. And Mel Kiper told everybody I was going to the Browns with the 14th pick, and that's where I thought I was going. And obviously, the Oilers thought differently.
We're talking to Brad Hopkins. Anyway, he is the seventh seed today, and he is taking on Brandon Wright in the first round of our Nashville sports bracket. Can you hear me, Brad?
I can. I'm at a disadvantage, man, going against Brandon Wright. Are you kidding me? He's a hooper, first off.
Well, you were a pretty good hooper back in the day, and so let me ask you this, Brad, because we're getting nostalgic, right? We've had a chance to talk to a lot of the people in this bracket. It's been awesome to catch up with a lot of the field here, a lot of kids or a lot of guys that who were as kids grew up and played their high school ball here. But give us your background when you were growing up. Who got you into sports? Who were your biggest influences? And I know you played a little hoops along with football. Who were your biggest influences?
Okay, so I was a huge NBA fan when I was a kid. I loved watching Karl Malone. I loved watching Clyde the Glide Drexler. I loved watching Dominique Wilkins, Spud Webb. I loved you know, every aspect of the NBA. I, you know, kind of sparingly watched the NFL. Really wasn't of interest to me. Matter of fact, my dad used to make me play football when I was a kid just to keep me out of trouble. And, you know, basically just kind of stay in shape for basketball is what I was using it for. So that was my mindset. Really, I was going to be a basketball player. And I really didn't show much passion in anything else. I was the kind of kid that, you know, me and my boys would ride all over town looking for pickup games, you know, and we'd play from sunup to sundown. You know, the smell of a gymnasium, it just, I mean, bro, I couldn't wait to get there. The squeak of some of tennis shoes, you know, doing Apaches, even though you hated doing them, they were necessary. All the stuff that the nuances about basketball is what I was passionate about. Didn't give a rat's about football. Then some guy came up with an idea of, you know, when I was playing football, he said, look, what we're going to do is you act like you fell down, and then to kind of fall, run over the middle of the field, and we're going to throw you a ball and see what happens. Well, they did it, and I ran 70 yards for a touchdown. So I've developed a different passion for football because I could be athletic, you know, playing football. You know, there were some things that I could do with, you know, my size that, you know, most people couldn't at that time. So I started kind of, you know, liking it a little bit more, but I was a junior in high school by the time I did that, just like Bryson. And so, you know, kind of long story short, I accepted a scholarship to play football because the reality set in that at, you know, 6'4 and a half, you know, 270 pounds, there are not many guards, and I certainly am not Zion Williamson. You know, I like to have the ball in my hand, but, you know, football was more of a reality for me. But I wasn't disciplined. I didn't, you know, have a process or any kind of connection to resources that would have kept me focused to not eat my way to tackle, which is exactly what I did. I showed up in Champaign, Illinois, a ripe 270 pounds after they recruited me at 235. And I was wondering why the offensive line coach kept rubbing his hands together and just staring at me. So it was, you know, all for the better, we understand. But, you know, that wasn't my plan. So I wasn't planning on becoming a tackle, you know. And when I got to be a tackle and understand really what was going on, I just tried to do the best I could do, you know, and learn on the fly, you know, and just, you know, used the things around me as motivation, like the guys I played with. You know, it really wasn't ever for the money, you know, it was really for, you know, being a part of something, you know. And that was one of the things when people always ask you, you know, you miss playing the game. Well, who the hell misses 9-on-7? You know, who misses, you know, goal line drills? Who misses, you know, playing when it's sub-zero outside? You know, you don't miss that. What you miss is going through all of that with your brothers, you know, and being a part of mm-hmm. a unit, being a part of something. And usually that was continual for us since we were kids. And then once that is over, you know, it's over. And if you don't have a plan, boy, life can be sucky.
Who was the coach that had the biggest influence on you? Whether it be a football coach or a coach in any sport growing up, who was your biggest coach's influence?
There was two. One, his name was Paul Carther. He was our high school wrestling coach, and he was also a really, really good football player at Moline High School, where I went to school. He was all-state, went to a smaller school, I think a D3 school. Really didn't, you know, football wasn't his future, so he ended up teaching. And he was not only a one of our coaches, he taught history, you know. So here's somebody that, you know, did something outside of sports, you know, as far as the curriculum was concerned, and had a huge influence on not only the athletes, but this entire student body, because he was one of everybody's favorite teachers. So not only was he a great football player, but he was also, you know, a student favorite. Everybody loved taking his classes because he was fun, and you know, you learn something when you're in there. And so he had a huge influence on me. Then when I went to college, it was Mike Beal. He became my offensive line coach. After my offensive line coach that originally was there ended up taking the head coaching job at Southern Illinois. His name was Bob Smith. And Mike Beal used to always just, I mean, be real with us. You know, when you're in those settings, like, you know, when you don't get to go home for Thanksgiving, when you don't get to go home for Christmas because you're playing in bowl games and stuff like that, and you're spending so much time with a coach and his family, you know, you develop these really cool relationships. And he was one of those that, you know, I don't hold it, I don't keep it up like I should, but he's definitely one that I, you know, really miss the most.
talking to Brad Hopkins, a longtime left tackle for the Tennessee Titans. And as I listen to you talk about Bryson and his experience, I'm curious of what your approach has been with him of knowing some of the things that he's going through, because you went through it yourself, knowing what it's like to play in the NFL, even though the league has changed quite a bit since you last played, but you spent 13 years there. Do you maybe give him some of that advice, even though he might not want to hear it right now, of, hey, you know, when you know, make sure you're taking care of your money, make sure you're doing this and listening to these people? Or are you letting him experience this like you got to experience it?
So this is the uniqueness about Bryson, Chase. Everything I went through, he was going along through it with me. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The decisions I made economically, you know, he felt. You know, the lifestyle we provided for him, he knew where it came from. He has been in and around facilities ever since he could walk. So, unlike me, he was born into this, you know. Whether he wanted to pursue it or not, you know, it was definitely up to him, because guess what? His brother, who was born 12 months later, he's not a football player. He's a baseball player, you know. So, and obviously my daughter doesn't play football either, so it's not like she would have pursued it like Bryson did. So, but he wanted to do what he's doing. You know, that was the difference in what we're doing. I didn't necessarily see myself being a football player. It wasn't a goal of mine. You know what I mean? When someone asked me when I was a kid, hey, what do you want to be when you grow up? I didn't say a football player. Bryson did. You know, so obviously there are some things at the adult level that we soundboard off of one another. I don't make Bryson's decisions, not even close to it. I want him to be someone that, you know, experiences the elation of making a good decision and also experiences the growing pains of making a bad one. You know, but he also knows that he can use his family as a resource. It's not just me. You know what I mean? It's his mother. It's my wife. It's his brother and sister. It's, you know, it's his mom's husband. We are a very close-knit group, you know, and we do our best to pour into him and give him, you know, the support he needs to be the best person he can be.
I got one football Titans related question for you. Is last year we saw the ups and downs of the offensive line, and I think a lot of that had to do with Taylor had the 4-game suspension. You had a new guard that had come in via free agency. You had another guard that was a rookie. Jack Conklin was coming off injury. Conklin is the only subtraction from that offensive line this year. Dennis Kelly is going to slide in, at least from the beginning, at right tackle. He's very familiar. How important is it to have that continuity like you guys had, even though you had, you know, different guys that would leave or come in, but to have that continuity going into this season for that Titans offensive line?
Chase, continuity is timing. And timing can only be perfected when you do it consistently over and over and over and over and over and over. And you get where I'm going? And over again. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
And with him now being in the position where Dennis can be that guy consistently, and he's already said, I am that guy, so he believes it in his own mind, then it shouldn't be hard for them to establish that continuity. But being able to work in unison, being able to work without even saying anything, you know what I'm saying? I remember Bob Young back in the day, my first offensive line coach, said, we've got to be like ballerinas, you know, working, you know, in unison with one another, you know. And you always reference the balled up fist versus an open hand, you know, where the fingers are exposed and, you know, can definitely be more vulnerable versus you getting punched in the face by a balled up fist. You know, that's what we like to reference, offensive line play. And when you've got your people in place, that's what helps. And that's where it starts. You know, I'm not trying to be, you know, funny when I say that it starts up front with the big bodies, but that's exactly where the whole game starts. You know, even teams that have great defenses, they would love to have a great offensive line because they know that going up against other great defenses, they got a chance. Because if they don't, then it could be a long afternoon, you know what I mean, because nothing's working. And you've got to be able to stab at the line of scrimmage. And whose job is that? It's the big bodies up front. And the less you have to tinker with them, the more that they can stay in place and do what they do, you know, bar injury, free agency, vitamin C, whatever. You know what I'm saying? You got to be able to stay on the field and produce consecutively. And that's what they need to do.
Do you know where you can find any vitamin C? Because I can't find any. Do you have a stash at home?
I do, because I'm actually trying to stay up on my vitamins. They say that the vitamin C kind of helps with the keeping the Rona away, you know?
Yeah, I know. I'm looking for it. It's bone dry on all the shelves. Can't find it.
Well, my wife is one of those weird, you know, takes vitamins and makes me take vitamins and stuff. So we've actually been doing this stuff. So she's already – we don't have this. We're not out there furloughing vitamin C and toilet paper, you know what I mean? But, you know, we have enough to, you know, get by.
Good to talk to you. Good to hear from you. Glad things are good at home. You guys be safe. If you win, which you're in control, up 75%, Mookie Betts is also in control. That will be your second-round matchup. You and Mookie Betts.
That's a wrap for me. Anyway.
I don't know, B-Op. I'm just saying. I don't know.
The Titans have a lot of pull. The Titans have a lot of pull.
Yep.
Yeah, baseball, man. Everybody knows Mookie Betts. Come on, man.
He's the 2 seed, but I'm just saying, 2 versus 7, upsets happen. It could happen.
No, isn't that the 5-11 matchup? Isn't that the one that always is crazy?
5-12 is crazy. In our bracket, it has been 6-11 has been the upset special. The 11s have been winning.
Yeah, yep. Blaine's beating Golden Tate right now.
Yep.
Oh, Blaine's beating Golden? Shut up.
Yep. That's the 11-6 in your bracket.
Well, I would have thought that, you know, sure, there's the Titan issue, but I would have thought that the Pope John Paul II, is that where he went to school?
Yep.
Yep, JP2.
I figured the JP2 product, you know, that kid would have an inside track, but I guess, man.
And the 5-12 in your bracket is your teammate, Big Al. He's the 5 seed, and he's currently slightly losing to Kimo Tiiminen. So right now the 12 is winning.
Nice.
And the 14, so Kevin Dyson's winning.
Now that one's going to go right down to the wire, I believe.
Yeah, I think I was looking at the brackets. Who is Jordan Tutu going up against?
He's going up against Mookie. Yeah, he's losing. 63% for Mookie, 37% for Jordan.
Tutu is performing well for a 15 seed, for sure. Don't you think he's done well? He's done the best of any 15 seeds so far.
Yeah, of any of the 15 seeds, he's done the best, yep.
Dice is a 14. He's up 76-24.
All right, so here's the alley-oop for your next guest. Where's Eddie at right now?
Eddie is the 1 seed and cruising. Cruising up. I think last check, 93%. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Who's he going up against?
Poor Blake Jeffrey.
He's going up against Blake Jeffrey on. And Blake Jeffrion is a Nashvillian who played for the Predators, so he has a great spot in Nashville sports history. But he's one of those guys I would have to say is happy to be in the bracket.
Remember, we used to talk to Blake back in the day. Our day, remember?
Yep, no doubt. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at that. But when you said 93%.
Well, you can get this reference better than anybody, Brad. Right now, Eddie's looking up at the Jumbotron running away, watching him run into the end zone, watching himself run in the end zone. Hey, good to talk to you. We'll talk soon. You guys be safe, and thanks for joining us.
All right, brother. Anytime. You got to take care.
All right, that is Brad Hopkins. B-Hop in control right now is the 7 seed, and he just referenced it. We are expected to be joined by Eddie George here very shortly on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good messaging. And that's exactly what we've been doing. This is Show 11. Darren McFarland, that's me from home here on the south side of town in Rutherford County. Willie Donick holding the fort down over in East Nashville, Chase McCabe on the west side in Bellevue. Ironically, Bellevue, that's where it all started with the Oilers/Titans in trailers right by the Bellevue Mall. Hard to believe, an NFL franchise. That's where
I
they
went
were
in those
set
trailers.
Up. Do what?
I went in those trailers.
Yeah, so did Willie and I. It's crazy. And so I don't know if Eddie went into the trailers, but that was the setup, our next guest. So we go from B-Hop. So two teammates to Eddie George, who was on the line with us. Eddie, how you doing?
Man, great. You know, we were talking about the trailers just a moment ago. In fact, that was an upgrade from our facilities in Houston. So we did go together. So we were like, oh, this is grand. We got trailer parks for our meeting rooms. Our weight room was in a medical facility. We're walking by offices so as we're going to our workouts. Our bikes were in the hallways. Yeah, it was, you know, our stationary bikes were like in the hallway, and people are walking by for lunch break. It was just fantastic.
In all seriousness, how crazy! I mean, here you are, a guy that goes from Ohio State, which, you know, that program's got top-notch facilities at that time, and you're in the NFL. You're a first-round pick, and it was obviously chaos and craziness in Houston before you eventually. How weird was it starting out your career like that?
Well, that's all I knew. I was thinking to myself, man, this is the NFL? This is the glamorous life? Like, I'm thinking, you know, best of everything, jacuzzis, catering services, massage therapists, the top-notch equipment. In fact, you know, to get our jock straps, they had it in a bin, and it was open season. So it was like you have to dig in there and find your size and take it from there, you know. And then the pads and everything else were just like in buckets in the middle of the floor. It was like Pop Warner. It was crazy.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was madness. And I remember this is like in the mid-90s. You know, guys are still on the back end of like taking smoke breaks in the parking lot. You know, it was smoke cigarettes, and you know, it wasn't the TB12 workouts or anything of that nature. We would go get lunch at a local Mexican restaurant or Chinese spot or McDonald's, and we'll come back with our lunch. It was nothing like it is today, where they have catering service. They have their own chefs now, so it was quite different. And I think that's what made us really humbled, or humbled me. And once we got to Nashville, and once 99 came around, we got the facility and everything else, it was like, oh my God, this is heaven. We got to protect this. So it was interesting times for sure.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything about kale shakes in that story.
No kale shakes, no avocado ice cream, none of that.
So then you get here and you're playing basically away games as home games in Memphis, yeah. And then you're playing kind of away games as home games at Vanderbilt as we sat there and we're like, this is an NFL game and there's like 26,000 people there. Like, what
no
in
doubt.
The world is going on?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
You move into your new home, and so that's when it probably felt like, oh, so this is sold-out game, so this is life in the NFL.
Yeah, and that's when we were like, oh, God, we're this is a real NFL experience, and we have to protect this at all costs. People are in the stands, and, you know, there were standing room only in the preseason games. And when we saw that, we said we have got to win every single game in this building because we don't want to lose this love. It was something we never experienced before. Like you mentioned, I mean, we played in Memphis, and Memphis wasn't fond of us at that particular time. The fans weren't, and rightfully so. And then we got to Nashville. We played in Vanderbilt, but that still wasn't good enough. People walked by Vanderbilt on a Sunday, and they were thinking, hey, there's a church revival going on over there. You know, they had no idea it was an NFL game. So it was tough to give away tickets. We were second fiddle to the Nashville Cats. You know, they were the dogs of the town, and they got in, you know, restaurants for free and got free stuff and walked in the clubs, and we had to wait behind the lines even with the Oilers. So it wasn't a pretty time to be an Oiler or associated with the NFL in 96 here, 97, 98 in Nashville, Tennessee. And once we changed the name and all, so forth, and that's when things just changed for us.
I want everybody listening to this and listen to what Eddie just said, and it was absolutely true for all the growth, the massive growth of this city. Anybody who's been here 5 years or less, you probably just raised your eyebrow, tilted your head like a dog hearing a weird noise, and what he just said was absolutely the truth. Like, you would never believe that today, but what you said, Eddie, was spot on back then.
Yeah, yeah, it was crazy. Downtown was a ghost town. It was nothing like it is today.
Yeah.
So I've seen the city come a long way, and I'm really glad to be a part of the growth of the city and the people here, the resilience of the city. And I'm glad that it's become really a international city where people from all over the world are coming to see what we have to offer. And it's phenomenal to see the growth here.
You talked about the love, and we talked about it on this show. When those chants started for Derrick Henry, we were like, okay, he's not going anywhere, because we experienced this when you played here, the Eddie chants, and it had been a long time since we had heard the fans chanting a player's name throughout the stadium, and that was what was going on with Derrick Henry. We were like, yeah, he's not going anywhere, because they have to keep him. They don't have a choice.
Yeah, he's the face of the franchise. He has emerged not only as the number one player on the team, the go-to guy, the most dominant force on the team. The offense runs through him. But what impressed me the most is his leadership capabilities last year. He really became vocal when necessary. Guys are following his lead. You can see in the locker room after those big playoff wins, him breaking the huddle down, and guys are just riding his tail, man. And I know the feeling of that. They're just in love with the guy. And a humble dude, a lot of tread on the tires. And I know that he got the franchise tag, but I believe that they're going to negotiate for a bigger deal, a fair deal, where it's a win-win on both sides, where he's comfortable, the organization is comfortable, and he gets compensated fairly. Because you look at his statistics, you look at what he means to a team, he's just not the running back. He is the focal point of the offense. And that's what we have to remember. You can't get caught into, well, running backs last this long, and look what happened to Todd Gurley, or what's going to happen with Ezekiel Elliott or Melvin Gordon. You know, Derrick is a unique back, and he led his team to almost a Super Bowl berth based off of that. He's a unique player. He needs to get paid in a unique way, and I think they'll figure that out.
We're talking to Eddie George, number one seed in our Phil Bredesen region, and his vote, his bracket is up for the voting today. And so, Eddie, we're getting nostalgic. I'm going to take the same angle that I took with Brad Hopkins here earlier in the hour and go back to you developing as a young athlete. Tell me first, were you always football? How many other sports did you play, and when did you decide to really dedicate yourself to the game?
Oh, man. I dedicated myself to the game when I was 5 years old on Christmas Day. My father got me my first helmet, and it was a Washington Redskins helmet. I don't know why he got me that in Philadelphia, but I just loved the game of football, and that was a great way for me to bond with my father, because he loved the game of football. He loved great running backs. He loved Jim Brown. That was his favorite running back, and how he talked about and revered Jim Brown and some of the other backs at that time, I wanted him to talk about me the same way. And that's when I really fell in love with the game. But as I got in high school, I had to do other sports to help my game on the field. So I played, wrestled for 1 year. I was inspired by Vision Quest. I will never do that again after I wrestled.
That's a great 80s movie reference right there.
It really is. Vision Quest was it. I mean, you watch that movie, you walk out saying, I can go wrestle. I want to be like, shoot, until you get into the conditioning sessions, and it's a different animal. So I wrestled.
Now, did you have the nosebleed problem like the guy Matthew Modine had in the movie?
Yeah, I did, but I got busted in my nose by the wrestler. It wasn't because of, you know, the strain, the stress, nothing like that. But I wrestled, ran track, and when I got to 14 Military Academy, my coach said, listen, you know, if you want to play big-time college football, forget about basketball, forget about soccer, anything other than these cute sports, you've got to be running and football, and that's it. And that's what I stuck to.
Okay, and this is the other thing I asked Brad. He had an interesting answer. So this is open-ended. It doesn't have to be a football coach. But who was a youth league football coach that really tuned you in to what it took to be great and reach your potential?
A youth league football coach. Wow. I would have to say it was my high school coach, Mickey Sullivan. it was tough love with Mickey. At that particular time, my father wasn't physically present in my life. He was battling his demons in the streets. And Mickey, at the time, when I was about 15, 16 years old, saw something in me, not as a football player, but just as a man, to pull me aside and say, hey, you know, young man, you need to get your act in order. And if you do want to play, you know, big-time college football, it's not going to be done on the football field. It's going to be done in the classroom. It's going to be done in the barracks. You have to change the way you think about yourself and how you present yourself first, and how you will do that will translate into the football field, your work ethic and so forth. And he stayed on me. He grinded on me. He would go out of his way to make an example out of me. You know, he called me this nickname. I hated this nickname. Pissed me off to death to this day, too. He called me Rose Petal. He says, you look great like a rose, but you're fragile. He's like a rose, you know. And that bothered me. And I worked my tail off to prove him wrong and to go after. So he really attacked me and pushed me to be the best person I can be. And I love him to this day. In fact, he's going into the 14th Hall of Fame this year. So Mickey Sullivan, for me, has been that guy, that guiding light for me.
Who was the key? How did you arrive at the decision, you and your family, to go to Fork Union Military Academy? Because as you just pointed out, it sort of, you know, it turns your life in a different direction.
This wasn't a family decision, okay? It was my mom's decision. It was, we didn't sit down around the table and say, hey, we have some options for you. You know, this is going to be a great thing for you. No. My mother enrolled me in the middle of the summer and said, you're going to go in 4 weeks to Fork Union Military Academy. And I cried, I kicked, I screamed, I called my grandmother, I called my high school coach, Coach Mollier, I called my father, I called everybody I could think of, the priest, anybody to get my mom to change her mind. And I remember taking the drive down to Fork Union, which is about 7.5 hours in Philadelphia. It was in my mom's 1980 orange T-Bird, T-Wing Mustang. And I said, but one thing to her, I said, I have to go to the bathroom. That's it, the entire ride. I was extremely upset. So she sacrificed for me. And I don't know how she did it, because she worked as a flight attendant. She worked as a model. And it's a pretty penny to send me there. So she had to really pull some strings to get me into Fork Union. And that place has been phenomenal for me. And I sit on the board for Fork Union now. I firmly believe that young men that need discipline, that need a guiding light, or just need to have that environment where they can focus, that provides it for you, provides structure. It gives you a discipline. You'll see life differently. And I owe my entire life to Fork Union Military Academy, because I would not be where I am today without that place.
Now, making those calls, Eddie, that would have been on a payphone or a hard line, right? That would have been those were your options.
Right.
We were talking to Eddie George, Titans legend. And Eddie, you played at Ohio State with Mike Vrabel, now the Titans head coach. And I'm curious of what your relationship was like then with him, and what you have seen not only through his playing career, but now as he is going into year three as the head coach of the Titans, just how his personality has come out with this football team and their personality.
Yeah, well, playing at Ohio State with Mike, I was a year older than Mike. He came in, you know, as a freshman with a lot of brash and bold and just hungry for success, hard worker. I remember there was a couple of drills that we had to do. We practiced all day long, and at the end of our practices, we would have live blitz drill. That was our last period, and I dreaded this because we've been banging all day long with 9-on-7, run period, all these things, and now we had to be physical at the end of practice. And it was always this one play where I had to go. We couldn't cut back then. But we had to go head up. So I said, okay, I know Mike is coming screaming off the edge. He's not going to stop. You block him once, he's still going to go. He was a grinder, and he was a hard worker. And, you know, just playing with him, I knew that he was going to be something special. Just watching him work, because he's always challenging me and the running backs. He would run with our groups, and he would try to beat us. It wasn't enough just to stick with us. He would try to beat you, and that's what he was. He wasn't afraid of anything to take on a challenge. And playing against him in the NFL, at Pittsburgh, and certainly New England, he's really developed that identity as a guy that's going to dot every I, cross every T, be meticulous, but put his thumbprint on it. So I'm not surprised at the success that Mike has had. You know, he's played under two Hall of Fame coaches, Bill Belichick, and Coach Bill Cowher, another Hall of Fame coach in college, Urban Meyer, and Bill O'Brien, you know, who's an adequate coach. But he has the pedigree of knowledge, and he has the grit and the grind, and now he can go and put his thumbprint on an organization, which he's done a magnificent job of. And I'm just really in awe of what he's been able to do up at this point. I think the sky's the limit for Mike. He knows how to draft. He knows how to motivate, and he is a leader. He knows how to coach this team. He is a player's coach, but he adds that bit of discipline where guys respect him.
1999, you guys make the magical run to the Super Bowl, and we all know the result. But the next year, I think there was so much excitement about what had happened the year before and the team. You know, we've talked to Derek Mason about this quite a bit, that the team was better. You guys felt confident. You felt that you could get back. And unfortunately, that's not what happened. So I bring that up because I look at the Titans this year of going to the AFC title game and coming up just a little bit short to the Super Bowl. What would your advice be for that group of guys of not expecting anything, of just knowing that you have to take each season like it's as a brand new one?
Well, they know how good they can be. Now they know. I think this is the year that we see them go from 10 wins to 12 or 13. This is that spike year where you'll see, okay, we don't quite know how good we can be. You kind of saw that in the beginning of last year. And toward the end, they know. They said, hey, we are a pretty damn good football team. In fact, we believe we're the best team in the NFL, bar none, and came one game shy of going to the Super Bowl to prove that. Now they retooled the season. It was going to be a different team, different leaders. You try to keep the nucleus of it. So now you improve that team. And now I think this is the year that they go from being good to great. And that's what I think is going to happen. You know, there's no egos on this team. There aren't guys that are out of control. It's not the team running, you know, it's not the players running the team. It's well structured. And you got guys that have great personalities on this football team. And they love each other. That's the one thing I can see, is that they have a genuine love for each other. That's something that we had. That's something you have to have if you want to have one of those special teams, is the genuine respect, appreciation, and love for one another, and see others accomplish and grow and support them in their process. So this is truly a team. I think we're, you know, barring no major injuries, seeing how well they do in the draft, who they bring in, if they get Derek signed, of course, I think this team is going to take that next step and be a dominant force next year, a team to be reckoned with week in and week out.
Eddie, as we mentioned, you're a one seed in our bracket of the best Nashville athletes over the last 30 years. The number one overall seed is a guy that handed you the football, your career with the Titans, and Steve McNair. You both had your numbers retired by the organization, and historically, Bud Adams had said you had to be in the Hall of Fame to have your number retired. And what did it mean to you to be able to share that moment with Steve's family earlier last season, to have 9-27 retired by the Titans?
It was an honor. Something I didn't expect, something I wasn't looking to have done. Amy found it in her heart to make that happen for Steve and I. It was a tremendous feat for her to do that, and that to show the appreciation that for Steve and I, really was moved beyond words once I got in there, and once I saw all the players coming back, and it brought back a rush of memories, and to be in a class of men that have had their jerseys retired in the history of the NFL, there aren't many. That's such a huge feat, and you know, was just a tremendous gesture for Amy to go out above and beyond, not just that day, but the entire week, phone calls, of interviews, of players from that I played against, from Peyton Manning to Ray Lewis to guys like Deion Sanders reaching out. I mean, just guys just saying, hey, man, congratulations. That's a huge feat. Jerome Bettis, who's a dear friend of mine. I mean, that meant a lot. So to have that done was awesome, and it was a day I'll never forget.
Eddie, we'll end with this. At the end of our interview with B-Hop, he asked how you were doing because you guys are in the same region in this bracket. He's in control with his game today, and he said, how's Eddie doing, the one seed? I said, well, Brad, you can get this reference better than anybody other than Eddie. I said, right now, Eddie is headed to the end zone, and he's looking up at the Jumbotron, and he got a kick out of that because you got 93% of the votes right now.
Well, you know, it gets tougher, so we'll see. I think this is a great thing you guys are doing in light of all that's going on. I want to send out my prayers and condolences to those that have been affected by this virus. Thank you to all our first responders, our people in the medical health care from Vanderbilt to all the hospitals in the area and the smaller hospitals. Thank you so much for putting their lives out there on the line for this. If we can encourage people just to stay inside, you know, I guess we're in the middle of that wave here in Middle Tennessee that's going to be coming. We're going to start to see spikes, so it behooves everyone to stay inside, be with your loved ones. Take time to do some spring cleaning. And what you guys are doing right now is to get our minds off of what's going on right now. It's been tremendous. So thank you for providing a source of entertainment and calling me, calling Brad, calling everybody to get them to come on and to give the fans out there listening something else to focus their mind off of, and knowing that, hey, we want to get through this, but only the only way we can get through this is together. And if we can do it together by staying in and taking care of each other by doing that, that's the best way to do it.
Well, well said. Thank you for your time. As always, you and your family be safe, and we will certainly talk to you down the road. Thanks for doing this,
Eddie. My man. Hey, blessings, man. Be safe.
All right, that is Titans legend Eddie George. It doesn't get any better than that. Whew. Folks, that's why you listen to this show, for stuff like that. We will come back and wrap up the third hour next. Elliot Freeman, our weekly chat with him, coming up at 1 o'clock. Hope everybody's having a good Thursday. And, wow, what an hour of interviews.
Awesome.
Brad Hopkins and Eddie George. Of course, we have the voting open for that region, the Phil Bredesen region. We're getting a lot of votes today. There's a lot of activity today in the voting. You've got until 9 o'clock tonight, so just a little bit more than 8 hours to go. Eddie George in the lead. Continues to be a great battle in the 8-9 seed with John Jenkins and Steve Sullivan. Morning Drive, Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad had John Jenkins on this morning. He tweeted out, tried to get a push from his fans. It worked. Right now, John Jenkins with 56% of the vote over Steve Sullivan. So Sully has got some work to do, and they're getting a lot of votes, by the way. They've got more votes than anybody else, that matchup right there. And, in fact, almost more votes than anybody else that we've had thus far. Well, I'll be curious to see what the numbers look like when it's all said and done. Mike Fisher, former Predators captain, in control. He's been in the control all day long. 83% of the votes. Marcus Mariota, 17%. Where's all the Mariota fans? I mean, gosh, I would say anything that wasn't praising him, you came out of the woodworks.
Where is that
loud? To defend Marcus Mariota. Where's all the Marcus Mariota fans? I know you're out there.
It's got more to do with Mike Fisher.
Yeah, probably so. Good point.
The nice guy ball. I'll tell you the matchup that I'm really paying attention to. I mean, Blaine Bishop still leads, but Golden Tate has been chipping away.
Making a push.
Yeah, 57% to 43% right now. So that's been changing a lot since we started the show. And I just checked Twitter. I'm like, okay, well, maybe Golden tweeted out, but he hasn't. So Somewhere there's some Golden
Somebody's
State supporters.
Making a push.
Yeah, there's some push there.
The one that I think is just destined for overtime, maybe double overtime. I think it's going to be a thriller, or at least a bucket at the buzzer. Albert Haynesworth and Kimmo Tiiminen, just right now, 50-50 still.
It's the closest one we've had yet in the competition.
No doubt. Yes. The 5-12 matchup. So 50-50 right now with Big Al and Kimmo Tiiminen. I know Skillsy had tweeted out making a push for Kimmo Tiiminen. And we'll continue to monitor that one. Blaine Bishop, the 11 seed. That would be, by the way, if Blaine Bishop can hold on for the next 8 hours, the 11 seeds would be 3-for-3 in our bracket in the first round.
Yeah, they would. So it's been fun. Your participation, you the listeners, has been fantastic. And definitely today making it interesting with some of these matchups. So really appreciate it, and we're having fun with it.
Kevin Dyson, the 14 seed, has been in control all day over Ron Mercer with 75% of the votes. B-Hop, who we talked to earlier, 76% over Brandon Wright as the 7 seed. And finally, Mookie Betts with 64% of the votes to 36 for Jordan Tutu. Mookie Betts is the 2 seed. Of course, that would set up a Mookie and B-Hop in the second round if it holds to form. When we come back, Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet. We'll talk some hockey with him to kick off the fourth and final hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE,
and I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you can win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and answer for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.